Chops TV.
You will be chopped.
Know what that means? Licking my chops.
Today I will show you how to do a karate chop.
Simply saying, no, he doesn't have the chops to do what it takes.
New thing. I'm busting chops.
Welcome to Chops TV, featuring Jennifer Lopez. Now here's Chops.
Chops TV, Chops and J-Lo. Normally, as you have instructed me to, I would ask Jen how you're doing today, but I think I know how you're doing today. It's kind of a mixed feeling overall, but not good. Are you still okay with the high of the win last night, or is it all just bad at this point?
You know what? This morning, there was still definitely the high. Creeping into the afternoon, it's starting to settle more. You know, that Victory Tuesday is coming to an end.
For those of you that are unaware, J-Lo, being a Brooklyn native, is a Jets fan. Not a Giants fan, a Jets fan. And so was finally at least coming around to cautiously optimistic territory with the Jets after they had acquired Aaron Rodgers. You didn't know how to feel about it at first. Then Hard Knocks, I think, softened you a little bit, and you were willing to accept it. You were excited. You thought they could finally be good. They could finally do something. And he gets four plays and then leaves with an apparent lower leg injury that a lot of people were already kind of pegging as an Achilles tear. And then it was once the x-rays were negative at the facility, but he was still like in a walking boot. It was like, that actually seems worse than if his ankle was just broken. And then he was out, and then Zach Wilson went in there and did his best to throw screen passes. But really, they won the game because Josh Allen threw interceptions, which is great. That's great for them. They were able to win the game any way they had to. But it doesn't – the rest of the season looks pretty bleak if it's going to be Zach Wilson under center once again.
Yeah, imagine it if like it was – okay, again, bear with me because I'm really bad at analogies. Imagine if it was your birthday – and someone was walking towards you with the most beautiful cake that you'd ever seen. And it had been so long since you had even celebrated your birthday because it's a leap year. So people forget to celebrate your birthday, right? So they're like two steps in front of you and then they trip and tear their Achilles.
It's not really an analogy. It's just a different event where the same thing happened.
Well, now the cake's gone. They're gone. The day's ruined.
And no one cares about your birthday.
And then you're not even going to get another birthday next year. Well, it's a leap year.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. Aaron Rodgers is getting older, so coming back from an Achilles isn't exactly a guarantee.
Yeah. Who knows? It could be a career-ending injury for Aaron Rodgers. Knowing him, probably not, you know, but I don't know. Will it be with the Jets? What if we... I don't know. There's so many things.
I will want to put on the record that it was not my fault that Aaron Rodgers shredded his Achilles just because I, as a joke, put on your Garrett Wilson jersey yesterday to greet you.
Absolutely your fault. This is why it's your fault, because you don't take the shit seriously. That's why.
I take things very seriously.
Absolutely nothing. You take zero things seriously, and it's not funny. And I hadn't even got to worn it yet.
You had put it on before.
Just to try it on, but that's not the same. Like, you don't... It hadn't been, like... What's like based? You know, when you get a cast iron skillet and you gotta season it a little bit. I hadn't even gotten to season it.
You hadn't even seasoned it.
You know, mistake one. Then, oh, mister, I gotta get up early to go do my radio show, but I'm tired. Start sleeping on the goddamn couch before the half is even up. I said, get out. I said, go to bed. But what? I want to watch. You want to come upstairs? I said, no, I don't want to go upstairs.
I did continue watching upstairs.
But I was like, it just was crazy to me that you knew what was happening on the television and you thought that I wanted to go upstairs with you with the lights off while you were fucking snoozing in La La Land and, you know, Jordan Whitehall is getting... three interceptions.
Whitehall or Whitehead?
Whitehead.
Yeah. I mean, that made the game exciting and everything. But to be fair, when I was starting to fall asleep, the game had drifted into unexciting territory because Josh Allen was playing poorly and Zach Wilson is Zach Wilson. So we were in this situation where it was like 13-3 for a long stretch of time.
Yeah.
And
but even who cares? That, but even that, still the game was flying by. And like, this is my biggest gripe. I've sat with you and watched so many fucking Iowa football games, literal slog fest, torture, ripping your nails out. No anesthetic, torture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't even sit there for the rest of the game and watch it with me. Because you were up. You just said you were up.
You were the one who sent me upstairs. You told me to go upstairs.
You needed to do some jumping jacks and get your energy back up and fucking stay there and witness
it. I can't do jumping jacks. I have a pretty much broken toe right now.
See, this is what I mean, man. Like,
on an actual serious note, I do feel bad for you today because I know what it's like to have a team that you're excited about and think that they've got something going, and then it just all falls apart right in front of your eyes. Usually it does not happen in the first, not even the first game, the first series of the season, but it really sucks. And the Jets are a long-suffering organization that have just never been able to put it all together. They've had like 16 starting quarterbacks I saw today since 2016. It's not good stuff.
It's not even that, right? Because obviously, like, the quarterback situation has been a plague on this team.
2016. That's not right. Sorry.
16 since 2016?
I wonder where I saw that stat. I think I'm just getting the 16 mixed up.
No, it's got to be like 5 or 6 since like 2013. It hasn't been 16. It's statistically impossible.
No, yeah, it is. There's like not enough quarterbacks on your roster.
But so like the quarterback thing has been a plague on this team for a while now. But the more devastating aspect of it is that imagine you have all the ingredients to this beautiful cake that you want to eat for your birthday, but it's a leap year, so you can't ever really eat it because no one wants to celebrate. Well, you finally get it. The only thing that you were missing was an easy bake oven. God, you had been begging for this easy bake oven for years. You sell your parents. God, please just pay for a great easy bake oven. I promise you, I'm going to make the best cake ever, and we're all going to eat it, and we're all going to be happy. And then the easy bake oven blows up. And now you don't even get to have the cake, but all the ingredients are there.
So I don't have the exact stat that I saw today, but I'm seeing some other ones. This one was from March, so maybe you can add one to it. But the Jets have had 28 starting quarterbacks since 1994. So only 5 have made it a full year starting. And the one who most recently made it a full year starting was Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was only in because Geno Smith got sucker punched in the locker room and broke his jaw. Years down the line, he's actually playing well for the Seahawks again.
Geno Smith. God.
Do you feel as a Jets fan that you're in some sort of football purgatory?
It does feel like I am in some sort of limbo. Like, we get so close to the sun and then immediately plummet down back into the depths.
Yeah, so football purgatory actually brings us to our actual topic for today. So we just zoomed right through it. It was the episodes they're all like 40 some minutes long, but Friday Night Lights was a pretty quick watch for us as we got really into it and we're just willing to, oh, let's just put on Friday Night Lights right now at just about any turn down the line. And then it was,
what'd you say, start to finish, a month maybe?
Yeah, if that. We were probably at like at least a season a week there.
We were zooming.
Now, it does go faster because the first season takes a while because it's like a full 22-episode slate. Every subsequent season, I believe, is like 13 episodes. So it moves a little bit faster once you get into the later seasons. But still, yeah, we just ran right through it. And it was about season 3 when they start to do...
Wait, hold on 1 second on that note. Isn't it weird that they were sort of doing that like shortened season model before streaming?
I think they realized after season 1 that with the conceit of the show being we're following a football program, it doesn't make sense to do more weeks of a show than there are weeks of a season. Because once they get to like the playoffs in season 1, there's still like 10 more episodes. And so there's only like 4 more games in all of that, and that's how you end up with, as I was watching it, I was so surprised with how many of the storylines that ring like in my memory and like that I'm like, oh, these are big deals. They like all happen in season 1. Like even the littler ones, like Tim Riggins has that neighbor. That's in season 1. That I would have easily guessed that was season 2. when Tyra's mom like falls through the table. That just shows up in season one. That was always something that stood out to me. So there's just so many things that they packed into that. So no, I'm not surprised they did that. And it was the smart thing to do, because then finally in the last season, they actually line up the time of the year with the what's going on in the show. And you have that whole holiday episode, which had to be around real Christmas time.
Yeah. It would be awkward if it wasn't, especially if it was still
on. That like aired in March.
Network. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't have worked. So it was in season three, though, where we got, because we just talked about it when we were most of the way through season two. Now we've gone all the way through it. In season three, they start to have these like kind of send-off episodes for characters that had been around for the first two seasons but had graduated high school. A problem I don't think they were planning on contending with as much as they had to as the season went on, because I don't know how successful they thought it was going to be, but they're like, these kids can't be in high school forever. At least not all of them. Some of them, it seems like, oh no, they've got another year. So they get really good at not saying ever what year the kids are in. But in season three, they start to send off Smash. They start to send off Jason. And something kind of clicked for me. I was like, you know, because they don't pay attention to these years and none of it really makes sense, there's like more to this than just linear, this is high school kid stuff. And so I just threw it out to you. I was like, do you think Dylan is like purgatory and they have to get through something to get out of it?
Well, it was like at the end of, I forget which character, but they disappear and fuck off for the rest of the show, basically. And then you're like, yeah, and we just like never see them again. Like they've gone off and they don't exist anymore.
Which like did used to happen in like 90s sitcoms, but usually it was like a one-off character in one episode.
No, like these major characters.
That like get of arcs and stuff.
Yeah, so then you start thinking about it more. It's like, okay, so do they have to like have an achievement unlocked and then they get to leave? Like are they just stuck there? And then I'm like, yeah, kind of like purgatory. It sounds like hell. And then you start singing the Devilstown song.
So yeah, in the season one finale, and this kind of became like a pseudo theme for the show. I remember it being in like promotional stuff when season two was coming out as well. So they play the, what is it called? Devilstown by Cave Town, which is why two towns? I don't like that. Not the point though. They also play it at the end of the series, right? Mm-hmm. At the end when they're doing the montage of here are all the characters ended up. And in the song, the part that they play in the show the most is I was living in a devil town. Didn't know it was a devil town. Oh, Lord, it really brings me down in that devil town. And it goes in this thing about vampires and how they're all vampires. And it's like, all right, that all works. They're all leeches on each other. Sure, whatever. But either way, it made me say, if that's the song they chose as like the theme and they're really trying to play this up that Dylan is a quote-unquote devil town.
Yeah, because the real theme sucks.
It's just an instrumental. It's good. I was like, you know what? I think that we can make this work and we can theorize this. So then you looked more into that song.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So essentially, Texas for Eternity. In this TED Talk, I will explain why the town of Dillon, Texas is purgatory. And therefore, in fact, the entire show, Friday Night Lights, is actually an allegory for escaping hell, a la Dante's Inferno, if you will.
All right. Let's do it.
So the evidence, if you go into the lines of that song, that Devilstown song, it goes, life's all right in a Devilstown. Yeah, no one's going to catch us now. Then they go on to say, the Devilstown is colder in the summertime. I'll lose my mind at least another 1,000 times. Which leads me to believe that we are caught in, like I was saying about the Jets, some sort of limbo, right? It's a secular thing that's happening.
And it's cold in the summer, leading right up to what everybody's worried about the entire year, which is the Dillon Panthers football season.
Sure.
And then you lose your mind thinking about it, and then the season actually starts.
Dante's Inferno, many of the circles of hell, famously not hot.
Well, didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not famous, but some of them are just not hot. So there you go. So yeah, Devilstown's cold. Let's see. What else makes sense about this? And the fact that like the time and like is cyclical in this like purgatory of this town. The years don't really make sense. Like you were saying, the show starts and we know Jason at least is a senior.
That's made abundantly clear.
Jason is a senior. We know that the week starts on Monday because they have their interviews and stuff. So like we get like a very like clear delineation of time in the first couple of episodes of that show. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they go through the day throughout the episode.
And they follow that track a little bit as that season goes on. And then they do it kind of randomly for a few episodes every once in a while as the series goes on, but never like fully. But I think that was their original idea, was that like, oh, each scene will just kind of follow the week leading up to Friday Night Lights. But again, the 22 episode season one broke that already because there wasn't a game. They don't play 22 games in right. high school, even if they go all the way to the state championship.
Yeah, so all that is to say, like, the only two things that we know of, like, time is that Jason should be graduating this year and that there are 7 days of the week. That's it for as time goes. Do we even know what year it is? Is it supposed to be, like, contemporary, like, the current year?
Yeah, it's supposed to be, like, 2006. That gets mentioned. Because when they finally win, the shirts say 2006 state champions.
Okay. But besides that, we mm-hmm. really have no clear idea what time it is. Also, it's Texas. So, like, the seasons change. That was my big gripe in the beginning, too. You're like, no, it gets cold. And, like, people are wearing jackets.
Texas is a big state. Like, there's a lot of different climates throughout the whole state.
Yes, but we also looked it up, and it's West Texas, which means it's hotter.
I guess it could be a little hotter, but we don't know how far north. We don't know exactly where Dylan is supposed to be.
Yeah, so, but seasonally, it seems pretty consistent. So it's hard to tell what time of year it is, which, like, fucks with your brain, too.
And the closest we ever get to another season of, like, you know, not during football is the first episode of season two where they're at the pool and everything. But that's right before school starts anyways. But, we never get any winter, like, full on. Mm-mm. We never get any spring. We don't really get the summer. It's mostly just all in that fall. And yeah, so you're right. We see this like condensed version of time in there because this is where the characters are like going through their trials and tribulations of working their way through, as you've contended, the seven levels of nine?
Seven. Technically like five and a half.
Okay. And they're working they're working their way through it. And eventually some of them get out. Some of them don't. Some of them might never get out.
Yeah. In the first episode, they do make a reference to God.
God loves football.
God loves football.
Maybe that's why they have to perform well in football to get out of purgatory.
Potentially. That could
God be God loves football so much that he sees them perform and learn their lesson and find their true self. And then, boom, they can be out of purgatory. What do you think about this additional part of the theory that I was playing around with, but I'm not sure if there's any real evidence for it, except for, remember when Tyra says, like, she changed her whole approach to life after Jason Street got hurt?
Yeah.
Is the Jason Street moment actually a, like, microcosm of whatever happened to all these people, and that's what, like, locks them in this purgatory?
Like the plane crashing.
Kind of.
Like
a Final Destination type thing?
I was thinking like Lost, but yeah.
Yeah, kind of like Lost. That's a better one because that's actual purgatory. Well, we don't need to discuss Lost here too.
But yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
So like maybe they're all in a normal world.
It's the inciting incident.
Mm-hmm, and then Jason Street gets paralyzed and boom, they're all stuck in this purgatory. Now what happened to them in reality, I don't know. But that kind of seems like, because everything just goes crazy after that. It seems pretty normal. Like, yeah, they're a football-obsessed Texas town, but so is every Texas town. Then things get real wonky after that, and that's the first episode, and boom, we're into it for another 5 years.
Speaking of wonky, there's another line in that song that says, "We're all dead in a devil town. That's fine, because nothing's going to scare us now."
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't die.
Yeah, except for that guy that Landry literally kills.
Well, he's not a real character.
Sure, but all that is to say, what's going to scare Landry? Nothing. He could get away with murder. There are no consequences for him.
He literally does get
him.
Away with murder, yeah.
There are no consequences for Landry. Therefore, he lives without fear.
So there are no bad consequences because you're just stuck in purgatory no matter what. You're right. And they're not really...
Which is a mindset too, right? Being caught in purgatory is partially...
Are there some players that accept it and some players... Because you do see that, like, the players are like, Tim Riggins is a great example of, I ain't going nowhere, or no Riggins has ever amounted to nothing. I'm just going to sit here in this town and drink beer for the rest of my life, enjoy football while I play it. While you have characters like Smash who are like, this is my ticket out. This is how I'm going to help my family. This is how I'm going to help my life. And his whole arc for 2 years and a couple episodes is, how do I get a scholarship and get out of Dylan? Mm-hmm. And he's like the first one we really see get to cross the plane out of purgatory.
Mm-hmm. So a little bit better of a description of purgatory. So Dante imagines purgatory as like seven different terraces, and each one is corresponding to like a different like deadly sin, quote unquote deadly sin, right? So you've got pride, envy, wrath, sloth, gluttony, and lust, which are like kind of put together. And throughout the poem, Dante like wakes up in this like hellscape kind of, and like he and Virgil is his guide, and they kind of walk out of purgatory together after like going through each of the layers, and in the layers too they like meet people and like hear their stories and you know blah blah blah.
Does he ever mistake a giant windmill as a beast that they have to slay?
No,
that's Don Quixote.
Okay.
I don't know, it's Don Quixote and his little sidekick in that story. So
I thought it would be fun to correlate some of the trials that Dante faces as representations of the seven deadly sins to characters in this show, because they all kind of have their, you know, their
vices. That's not the right word exactly. Detrimental qualities.
Sure. Things that hold him back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to start?
Okay. We'll start with the character that we talked about the most, of like being the first one to break through.
The most obvious one too.
And yeah, I mean, it's very clear what character flaw this person has, and it's Smash, and he has pride. He's the cockiest son of a bitch this side of the Mississippi, maybe on both sides of the Mississippi. He refers to himself in not only the first person, but nickname first person, which I guess I actually did on the show yesterday. But I explained it as that was Mark talking about Chops. Chops and Mark are different people. But he like he's like always butting into other people's interviews. He'll do whatever he wants in the various places that the kids are eating. Yeah, he has an incredible streak of almost negative pride. That like it weighs hubris. Him down.
It's hubris at that point. And it's detrimental to his well-being. It's detrimental to the team. He's ambitious almost to the point of self-harm when he starts taking those like performance enhancements and just like a whole bunch of stuff with the college recruiting process and stuff like that. He basically is like shooting himself with the foot. He's a star, right? He is the star.
Yeah, he like one point gets a girlfriend who he really likes, who seems good for him, but he can't keep his eye off other girls too, like because he's the Smash, baby. He can do whatever he wants. And
that chick totally disappears too. Her dad comes back around and she's just
Waverly.
Gone. Yeah, Waverly. She failed the Dylan test.
Yeah, she's just gone. You're right. That was one of the characters. So the next one we went to, let's go to the end of the series and try to relate it to the East Dillon Panthers and how they fall into it. So Vince and Luke Cafferty.
Oh, by the way, what a plot twist. Who saw that coming?
What?
East Dillon Lions?
They start mentioning it the few episodes like leading up to it, but there was not much of a mention of it before, at least not that I noted. Did you not have no idea that was going to happen?
Zero clue.
Okay, yeah. So that was big shock to you. So Vince and Luke both show envy. One, that they're jealous of the Dillon Panthers, who have everything better than them, and all they want to do is beat them. But still, they feel, I think, kind of empty even after they beat Dillon, especially in that first season. That like it's a good stepping stone, but it doesn't quite fulfill everything they want. And then I think they're the best instance of two players being kind of jealous with each other. There's a little bit of that with Smash and Saracen early on, but it's also very clear that Smash is the better player anyways. These two are vying to be the best player on the East Dillon Lions, and there's like a kind of a frenemy rivalry relationship to it, but they're both envious of whenever the other one, especially at the beginning, plays well.
Yeah, and Luke, when we meet him, he is one of those like West Dillon implants, so like he's like already lying to this school about what his real address is. So he gets forced to go to East Dillon. So not great for him starting out right at the gate. And then he is like one of the best players to like come out of West Dillon in a long time. Like they're as excited for his potential as they were for like Jason Street. Like they were like, this kid is like great. Besides JD McCoy, like it was JD McCoy and Luke who were like gonna be the it guy. So then when they formed the East Dillon Lions, Luke you know, it's assumed that he's going to be the leader of this team.
How does nobody know that he actually lives on a farm? Like, a farm is a pretty, like, conspicuous thing for your family to own.
Yeah.
That you can't just be like, actually, we live in this house in this lot. Like, how does...
He's the only person, too. He's, like, the only student person that we see that lives on a goddamn farm.
Which is why... And then that's why there's the whole conspiracy, like... How could nobody else be lying about their address? Nobody else gets kicked out of the school by Tammy Taylor, but that starts a whole different thing. We'll move through these two just real quick. Tyra is wrath and Jason is pride. Those ones, Tyra, I think, is pretty easy to nail down there. She's like mad at the world, especially at the beginning.
Yeah, mad at her circumstance.
And then she works through it and eventually says, I'm going to have to take care of myself if I want to get out of here. And she gets into UT and does take care of herself and get out of there. Jason, pride, just because...
Jason was hard, right? Because he's such, like, a sympathetic character. It's like, sure, he might be, like, a smidge overly ambitious, but, like, that's because, you know, he has to, like, work to, like, get out of the wheelchair. Sure, he might be a little bit delusional. I could have sworn to God at the end of season two he was going to start walking. I was like, during the writer's strike, I was like, Jason's going to walk. Jason's going to heal himself in Mexico, and he's going to start walking.
In season two, yeah, they bring him to Mexico for some sort of shark injection that's supposed to make him walk. And then in season three, he meets a guy and just goes to New York and becomes a sports agent.
Yeah.
No need for a law degree or any experience.
Zero qualification.
You convinced one guy to come back to our agency. You're hired.
Did he finish high school? It's very unclear.
He does go back to school at one point. He at least gets his GED. That's what he said his plan was. Because then he goes and he tries out for the like Paralympic team. Yeah. I don't know if he ever even finished high school, but he's certainly not qualified to be a sports agent in New York City. But whatever. That's his send-off.
Yeah.
You get that whole episode.
He does seem like appreciative and grateful, though, for like the opportunities that he was given, like playing football and stuff and like being recruited by all these schools or whatever. So he portrays... You know, the ideal of, like, humble man.
But he has to kind of get there a little bit, too.
Yes.
And that's, I guess, where the pride kind of falls in, is that, like, he has to not be so proud and say, I'm going to have to work to get out of this situation. It's different than my life plan, but I'm going to have to do something to actually get out of it. And so he tries to do things for himself. Like, I guess it lucks out for him because it's a ridiculous plan to just go to New York and knock on an office and be like, hey, hire me. But
truly insane.
It's what happens to
him. And then, like, find the girl that you knock up, and then she's like gonna want to be with you. And like,
oh yeah, even though she very clearly did not want to be with you.
No, it seemed like they didn't even like each other.
She moved all the way to New Jersey just to get away.
Get away from you.
There are plenty of places that are far from West Texas that aren't as far as New Jersey, but that's what she does. I'll let you handle Tim. What's Tim?
So, Tim. Tim Riggins, complicated fellow, except in this aspect. He's absolutely 100% lust.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the embodiment of lust. Lustful things, lusting after things.
He's not super nefarious about it all the time, but like he's just one of those guys that if he's around a girl for like a few hours, he's smitten and ready to go all the way with her.
Well, okay, so it's two things, right? The girlies that he like doesn't care about, like, he will just, like, smash and pass, I guess, for, you know. So, he does have those one-night stands. But, like, the ones who are giving him, like, the most attention, like, he's going to devote all his time and energy to without, like, a real, not game plan isn't the right word, but he doesn't.
No, foresight.
Foresight, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, there's the neighbor. There's Tyra multiple times. There's Lila multiple times. And then there's also, like, I don't know if this, like, forms into lust, but he also has, like, a protector vibe to him. Like, he has that, like, with Julie. And then, again, Becca, whichever one that is at the end, the beauty pageant girl.
Oh, yeah.
Where he, like, treats them more like a father figure, even though he's, like, 3 years older than them.
The one with the Becca one is weird, though.
That one's...
It was...
I think they need to be a little more explicit about, like...
What this their is, relationship was, because it's fine to, like, have some confusion there, but considering how his affair with the mom across the street ended, like, highly, highly inappropriate and so gross, considering that they do end up in this, like, weird, like mentor-mentory place.
Mm-hmm.
But he also lusts after that land, the land that he ends up buying.
Yeah.
For not a farm. I don't know what the fuck he's going to
do. Again, with no foresight, what are you going to do with all this land?
Nope, Tim? He said, I'm going to buy this land and I'm going to build a house right here. And that lusting after that property gets him into a whole boatload of trouble.
Yeah, that's true. And then he takes the fall for his brother and goes to prison. But
which like stinks. Because like, not only is he still stuck in purgatory, but he's also now in prison in purgatory. That's awful.
That's double purgatory.
But this is my biggest problem with Tim, too, especially in this last season, that he took the fall for the chop shop, right? Him and his brother, which was his brother's idea.
Mm-hmm.
But because he needed the money for the land, he ends up doing it. They get a whole bunch of money or whatever. He ends up buying the land. He takes the fall so the brother can raise his family. Fine. He gets out of prison. Obviously, a harrowing experience for him because he comes back a little bit different, a little bit more hardened than he was originally.
Tim Riggins finally does change.
Yeah. But also resentful, which is fine, right? Resentful of your brother that kind of got you into the situation. But you were the one who decided to take the fall. You were the one who decided to go to prison. You were the one who decided that that was... You took the choice away from your brother in that instance. So, like, you can be resentful to an extent, but
at the one way point he does, he threaten to, hold it over his brother's head forever. Life,
yeah. But the way that you treat him, uncalled for. Because you took everybody's decision out of that when you decided that that's what you were going to do.
And no, his wife's a stripper and he's just kind of still living in the town getting drunk. But, what did you expect, Tim? They seem happy with their situation. So if that's what they want to do, then let them. The brothers at least got some stable employment being a football coach.
Mm-hmm.
First time he ever lasted more than a year at any sort of job.
And I bet it must be bitter watching your brother have the life that you sort of wanted for yourself. Because Tim originally is doing the football coaching gig and
mm-hmm.
whatever. Because Coach Taylor can't let any of his pupils... go make their own life path or whatever.
Well, that brings us to Coach Taylor and his biggest sin. It doesn't fit in technically to these ones specifically, but Coach Taylor is, I think that there is real reason to say that their marriage is a really realistic depiction of marriage. I think he is a good father overall, but he does get in his way with selfish decisions throughout the time, that everything he's doing with the football is the most important thing, not just for him, but for the family. Oh, hey, Tammy, by the way, 100 people are coming over to our house for a barbecue. Oh, hey, by the way, Tammy, I actually spent $3,000 on these uniforms of our own personal money, money we don't really have, and we're just going to have to figure that out. Oh, hey, Tammy, we're going to move to Florida because I think I'm going to become a college coach again. Something that comes up a second time as the season goes on, but he finally gets to leave.
Well, let's be clear. For the purposes of this podcast, we are using selfish endeavors and gluttony interchangeably because we can do whatever we want because it's our podcast.
We can do whatever we want. He finally says, you know what? It's your turn, Tammy, to pursue your stuff, even though she's wholly unqualified to be the dean of admissions at a college. But then they move to Philadelphia and they get out of it. Julie, their daughter, was a little harder for us to nail down, but we decided it was sloth because she's the opposite of what I was saying about Tim. She's like, I got to get out of this town no matter what. I got to have a better life. I got to figure this out. But doesn't really do anything.
No, she just makes poor decisions.
She dances in the first season, but that goes away.
No, she doesn't do anything. She complains about wanting to have this beautiful art life in Chicago, but doesn't seem to be applying herself in her studies very much to make that happen for herself.
Mm-hmm. And eventually just chases Matt Saracen off to his send up, which I guess counts for her. At the very least, making a decision to move to Chicago is doing something.
Yes. And that was kind of a selfish decision. He was talking with that art person or whatever. But ultimately, good for Matt Saracen, because what the fuck was he going to do in Dillon, Texas?
He was the opposite of Coach Taylor. He was selfless to a fault.
Yeah.
He was always
giving, giving until there's nothing left to give, right?
He's the giving tree.
Yeah, so you have to build yourself back up. What better place to do that is underneath the bean.
You put here that Tammy Taylor kind of acts like the guide. I mean, she is the guidance counselor as it goes on.
Yeah. So it seems like Tammy is in a position for the majority of the show where she is constantly helping people try to get out of purgatory. But she herself is stuck partly because of the selfish, gluttonous acts of her husband, who he keeps taking for himself and consuming.
And
winning isn't enough. It's all me.
And isn't quite interested in getting out of purgatory himself.
No, he's perfectly content to be there. He leaves for a period and then comes back because he decides that he misses his team or whatever.
I think it's fair to say, I mean, he is a football coach at the end, but that's because he followed Tammy to Philadelphia. I think there's fairness that, like, it would feel like the purgatory would follow the Taylor family if they were just following the ambitions of Coach Eric Taylor as time went on. I mean, his time at TMU wasn't good, that's mm-hmm. for sure. He was the only one there, but it wasn't good. And it was even worse for them back home.
But Tammy, no, she's like, we can't leave yet. I'm dedicated to these kids. We're dedicated, you know, this is our life. This is our town. We can't leave yet.
Yeah, right. So.
So good for Tammy. I guess she's like Virgil.
She finally guides her way out, though.
She finally gets out. Good for her.
Who is the ringleader of all of this? Who's in charge? Who's overseeing all these people? This one might be a stretch, but I think it's a really fun part of our theory. Because he is somebody who is deemed as very smart, but also doesn't seem to have the indication that he's trying super hard to get out of there. And he tries to have a band. And he's doing things. So But he pokes himself into the stories of so many characters, more so than just about any character in it. I'm talking about Landry, and I'm talking about the possibility that Landry Clark is the Satan of this Dylan purgatory.
Lucifer incarnate. Riddle me this, Batman.
Landry, Lance, Lucifer.
Whoa, stop. Now you're blowing my mind. Who is set to
Prince
profit?
Of Clarkness?
Stop. Who is set to profit most off of the turmoils of all the characters in the show? It really is Landry.
Yeah, he needs people to stick around to be in his band. He needs Tyra to stick around.
When she's at her weakest after her multiple breakups mm-hmm. and stuff, he's always just around when things seem to be happening.
He follows Coach to East Dillon for no real reason other than a carryover character who all of a sudden it becomes clear that Landry was a freshman driving in the fall in the first season. Again, the years don't matter. Satan can drive wherever he wants in Dillon.
Eternal license. He recruits these kids to join this band, Crucifictorious, a.k.a. a cult. An occultic leader.
With definitely like biblical references to their name, for sure.
For sure.
Ooh, and does he try to hide under the guise of it being a Christian band when really he's the devil in all of this?
Yeah.
People are saying.
He kills a guy and gets away with it.
Just fine. His dad even helps him. Dad.
He lures his dad into it too. He pulls an innocent into his whole debacle, treacherous affair.
We're sticking with it. That's part of our theory.
Makes sense to me.
We talked about all the ways the people get their send-offs and everything, but one character we haven't mentioned, and I thought you would maybe come around to him because he does have some endearing, maybe isn't quite the right word, but kind of fun qualities. He's definitely a fun character to have in the show. You need Buddy Garrity in the show. But will he always be in the show?
Yes. Buddy Garrity is never leaving Dillon, Texas. Buddy Garrity is in purgatory in perpetuity. Forever. Texas forever. Texas for eternity for Buddy Garrity. Because he loves it.
Yeah, I mean, and he's the one. There's certain things with money and indulgences and everything, and that's so, definitely Buddy. He indulges in women, he indulges in alcohol, he indulges in the money of the boosters, of his own businesses, and it tears everything apart. And even though his whole world is falling apart around him, he gets cast aside by the Dillon Panthers. He can't leave. Your business has failed. Your family has left you. You're not a part of this booster group of something that is so a part of your identity. And then he just goes, I'll just become a booster for the East Dillon Panthers. Just leave, man. But he can't.
So in the context of actual purgatory and medieval life, there comes a development of a practice of indulgences. Famously, Martin Luther, the 95 Theses guy, pissed off. So pissed off that he wrote a bunch of things down and took a hammer and a nail. I don't know how accessible nails were back then. You know, you kind of have to make them or buy them, which is, things are expensive in this economy, whatever. So he goes, he nails it to this motherfucker's door to make a statement about why a big gripe of his was the act of indulgences, where sinners of the wealthy variety would essentially just pay off their sins, pay off their priests and popes and stuff, and basically pay their way into heaven, which is bad. You can't do that.
Which is the
opposite of like the whole thing.
Yeah, buddy wins at state championship and then just keeps paying his way to be associated with the team for years and years and years, and just Correct. Wants to be a part of it and a part of all that, a part of that glory.
Yes, everything that buddy does is self-indulgent and self-servicing. And how does he do these things? With money, which, you know, not a ton of people move to Dillon. So how many goddamn cars are these people running through that this business is so successful that he then launches a second business, which is this bar?
Well, but the car dealership closes down. So this
is his new... It does close down?
Yeah, I remember when he's taking Buddy Jr. home from the airport, they go by it and it's closed up.
Oh, okay. Because you know what? They are saying that the car business isn't doing so well, blah, blah, blah. He ends up spending Lila's college fund on this like pot scheme or whatever.
It was some sort of strip mall scheme.
Yeah, yeah.
Turn $70,000 into $200,000 real quick. It's a sure thing. It's not a sure thing.
Spoiler alert, it's never a sure thing. So, buddy, whatever. Cast out of heaven for eternity. I don't care. I can't believe that at the end of the day, knowing what he knows, Bo named his adorable little golden retriever Buddy Garrity. I can't believe it.
Maybe over time, Buddy Garrity will soften in your heart and you'll enjoy the character a little bit more.
I guess.
So anytime you go back to Friday Night Lights, Buddy Garrity will still be there for you because he will always be in Dillon. One more thing I wanted to go over in the purgatory is football is so important to these people that winning is everything. There is a little bit of a feel with the winning that it's kind of like selling your soul to the devil, that they get what they want. But there's always a catch to it. You never actually do get what you want.
Kind of like a monkey's paw.
A little bit, yeah. So I went through it with like season by season. So the first season, they win it all. And then coach thinks, because he's achieved this, oh, maybe he's got his ticket out. He gets a college job. He's going to go off to that, the next step up. But then he has a baby. College coaching isn't right for him. His family's having a really tough time because they don't make the move with him. And boom, he's back within weeks. He tried to get out on his own accord, and it did not work. In the second season, they lose in the playoffs, and that injury, not getting all the way there in on the football field, it takes away Smash's ticket out. He loses his scholarship, and then he has to work through that at the beginning of the next season and find football glory once again. The third season, they almost win the state title doing it Coach Taylor's way. Remember, he takes out J.D. McCoy and puts in Matt Saracen, but that actually gives more power to the McCoys and ends up getting Coach fired and kind of deeper into the levels of purgatory in Dillon, because East Dillon is way worse than West Dillon because they've just been neglecting that part of the town for so long. In the fourth season, East Dillon beats the Panthers, but because of everything that happens and how much infighting there is with the Taylor family and they're trying to take over things or whatever, gets Tammy fired as principal, and she descends further. She loses the power of being a principal of a blue ribbon school and becomes the guidance counselor at East Dillon, which is definitely a step down.
She wanted that, to be fair, too, though. She was sort of into it.
Then in the fifth season, they do win it all. We don't get to see that final play. They show the ball going through there, but we don't get to see a catch. But they show everybody in their rings at the end. But East is destroyed. And then Coach and Tammy finally get out by not pursuing football first, as we said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
Football's a death trap. Texas is a hellmouth.
Very
other
possible.
Characters that get stuck behind, Epic
and Santiago are the two biggest examples for sure.
Oh yeah, like two kids that are just absolutely abused and failed by the system that they're in. But like, I guess fuck them because the writers don't care. So whatever.
Yeah, and this isn't. These are two people. Santiago is in season two, right?
Which is writer strike year. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's maybe a little bit of an excuse there, but both him and Epic have big storyline arcs going on with them. Epic is having a really hard time. She's a foster kid and being in school and like staying on the straight and narrow and just getting her work done and being all right. And Tammy tries to help her. And she ends up like getting into an argument with the teacher while the teacher's accusing her of stealing. And she knocks Tammy into that window and Tammy hits her head. And then like Epic gets arrested and that's it.
Yeah. And I wonder,
like, if are we supposed to believe that that's what Tammy did, that Tammy resulted in her getting arrested and that was her helping her?
Yeah. I don't know if the lesson is like you can't help everyone, but it really doesn't feel like that.
No.
Because even that incident is not really Epic's fault. Again, she's just like this product of this failed system.
Yeah, and even Tammy was like, while she's getting arrested, is like, no, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, there's probably protocol if you do something to a teacher in school, but it doesn't feel like Tammy's going to press charges on her. And they had done a lot to like show some redeeming qualities of Epic, that she actually can be a really sweet girl. She has the moment with the little Gracie Bell she's at the house, that kind of stuff. In Santiago's case, he went back and actually got the antique watch for Buddy back, and he got beat up by his friends, but he was trying to say, I'm trying to reach out of that old life and become better, and I appreciate what you're doing for me here, buddy. And he's never seen again.
Nope.
Fucks never off. Even mentioned again.
Falls off the face of the earth. Epic does, like, I think they mentioned she, like, gets readopted. She gets put in a new foster home or whatever after lying about, like, the situation that she was in her current foster home, whatever. If that foster home is not in Dillon, Texas, she may or may not have escaped purgatory. So now that I'm thinking about it more, is this ring of chaos and disorder all surrounding Tammy, really? Is it football, but is it also Tammy?
I think it's the coach. I think it's the Taylor family.
It's the Taylors, yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's something to that, so that kind of goes most of our theory about it being purgatory. I mean, there's definitely, like, we have evidence, so I guess you can let us know at @ChopsTV if you see it differently, but that's what we came up with for Friday Night Lights. J-Lo, as far as your first watch through, final thoughts on the series at large?
When you described it as One Tree Hill, but football in Texas, it was absolutely correct. That was the perfect description of the show.
To finally get you into it?
Yeah. And now, if it were on the air, I might have stopped at season 3. You know how I do this.
But since it was all there available to us right at our fingertips, you're like, well, let's just finish it.
Yeah, but because, like, and I think that's also a product of, like, characters that I care about end up leaving and disappearing for seasons on end. Like, Jason comes back in that last episode to, like, offer a handout to Coach Taylor after, like, he's gaining so much success with the success of the East Dillon Lions. But again, by the time that Jason leaves, I don't really care about him. The most glaringly obvious person who was not in that last season was Lila.
Yeah, she wasn't there at all. You're right. Pretty much every character at least comes back for like a scene.
A cameo scene, yeah.
Even Landry is, I mean, he's there very briefly, but he even comes back in that final season. Yeah, there is no Lila. Lila does come back in season 4, is that one?
Yeah.
When after Matt's dad dies. I think that's,
that was her send-off, her big send-off was her and Tim are just not seeing eye to eye on the trajectories of their life, and they decide to part ways amicably.
I think the biggest thing that, you know, also like made the show a little bit confusing while they were making it, there does seem to be like a full on pivot to, okay, this is going to be about the Taylors and their life and their marriage and everything, which was always going to be a big part of it, but it becomes like the main part of the show. And I wonder if at any point there was more thought about like following Matt Saracen more.
It feels like there might have been. It feels like there was a timeline where Matt Saracen is the main character of the show, but like Tim Riggins is just like too hot for this timeline.
And then Tim Riggins becomes such a big deal that Billy Riggins becomes a main character of the show in the final 2 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So weird stuff. One more thing I wanted to go over with you that's not Friday Night Lights stuff, but ESPN and Disney, they finally came to a deal with Spectrum, so 15 million people have ESPN ABC back on there. But I saw this in the report about it and I wanted to get your take on it. Under the deal, the Disney Plus and ESPN Plus streaming services will be made available to Spectrum cable customers at no extra cost.
Pardon?
Which Disney had initially balked at In addition, Charter customers will eventually receive the planned direct-to-consumer ESPN streaming service that is in the works, but has no launch date. So basically what they did is said, okay, we'll figure this out and make sure that your customers get it, but you have to somewhere, I'm guessing it's going to be somewhere in the cable box, you can access these apps now, and these will be counted as subscribers. So Disney gets not really any extra money, but they do get to turn around and tell all their shareholders, mm-hmm. look at the growth of Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, but it's only going to be for, Spectrum isn't getting any new cable subscribers anytime soon.
No.
So this is really only going to be a one quarter bump. And this is what all these streaming services do. They look for one way to just get a little bump, and it's always artificial and it's never going to work. Just like Netflix, some people are going to buy back in and say, oh, I can't share it with people, so I'll have to get my own Netflix account finally. But I don't think it's going to be that many people, and it's not going to be that many people consistently. These streaming services, man, they are so hung up on them and invested so much in them that they're doing anything to make it seem like they're successful.
Are we all trapped in a streaming service purgatory?
Yes, we definitely are.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, yeah, Spectrum customers, well, enjoy your free Disney Plus and ESPN Plus. It's probably the ad-supported
which
version.
Which is bullshit, because mine is going up $3. Ridiculous!
Yeah, but we're not getting cable. That's for sure. All right. Kit is having a fit. She needs to eat. We need to eat. We need to make dinner. Hope you enjoyed our discussion of Purgatory and Friday Night Lights. I'm Chops.
I am J-Lo. Eternally.
Eternally. Thanks for listening. Eternally.
Chops TV is made possible by people who subscribe to podcasts and viewers like you.